Good morning, everybody. Boketov, thank you for coming. It's good to see people. I hope people are keeping well. There's quite a lot of viruses going around at the moment. Hopefully, you're in good health. I'd like to start by thanking our sponsors. Our regular sponsor for the whole of 2025, Hashirim, our sponsor, Le'ilu Nishmais Branabas Brandit, and Zedek Ben Kalman, Zichronam Livracha. Very grateful for that sponsorship. And also, there's a special sponsorship today from Miriam and Marvin Schechter. I saw Miriam and Marvin, where they're sitting, somewhere over here, somewhere they were there, over back there. Sponsored by Miriam and Marvin on the yod side of Miriam's father, Irvin Ribner, Yitzchak Ben Ephraim Moshe Zichron Livracha, should be an aliyah from the Shamas. We're grateful for the sponsorship. Now, what I'd like to do with you over the next 3 weeks, please God, is as follows. In 3 weeks from now, I'm here the next 3 weeks, please God, but then I'm traveling for 2 weeks, so there'll be somebody else giving the shiur. Maybe Rabbi Königsberg or Rabbi Shaw, well, they'll work that out. But over the next 3 weeks, I'd like to do a series for you on an issues that we've never discussed before, in my shiur anyway, which are as follows. I'm involved at the moment in a few Ashkenazi Sephardi Minhagim negotiations. My niece, who is a wonderful young lady, is getting married to a wonderful young man. She is Ashkenazi, he is Sephardi. From a Moroccan background, if I'm right. And a few issues have come up. One of them is the issue of the Yichud room, which we're going to talk about today. He says, look, you know, I'm Sfaradi, there shouldn't be a Yichud room, and we'll look at that issue and the angles back and forth on that question. Because for Ashkenazim, the Yichud room is very important. We'll talk about that. I also had, as the director of the Midrasha that I run, we had a young lady who was Sephardi, who married a young man who was Sephardi, which is very nice, and I was involved in their wedding. And then we made Sheva Brachot for them at the school a few days later. And of course, we ended up with a very complicated discussion as to can we say Sheva Brachot at the school or not. There were a number of Sephardim there at the Sheva Brachot, friends of the Chatan and Kala, and people involved in the school. And some of them said, we should say Sheva Brachot, and some of them said, we can't say Sheva Brachot, we can only say two of the Sheva Brachot. One person there says, I'm not saying any Sheva Brachot. There were Ashkenazim there, and then we had, well, can the Ashkenazim say Sheva Brachot if they're so? We will talk about that. Many people are unaware of this, and we'll talk about that today. So what I'd like to do over the next 3 weeks is talk about some of these Ashkenazi Sephardi issues. Today I'm going to be talking about specifically, oh yes, good reminder, thank you. Could you please turn your phones off? Thank you for that, that's excellent. I really appreciate that, thank you. Please turn your phones off. Today I'd like to talk about some wedding issues. Then next week I'd like to tackle a topic which is a big topic, which I've never spoken about, maybe because it's been a little bit too daunting, but I'm going to get my teeth into it, please God, which is the Sephardi Ashkenazi pronunciation of Hebrew and switching from one to the other. So that'll take us 2 weeks. Next week we'll look at the basic issues, and then the following week, please God, we'll look at the issue of switching back and forth. We'll look at the Yemenites a little bit. That's a big topic, there'll be lots to do. But let's look at today. To start with, let me stress the importance within the Jewish people of having different tribes. This is not some kind of bidyavad situation. It was designed that way. We're meant to have Jews under one Torah doing different things. Let's start with Rav Sadia Gaon. Rav Sadia says, what is the uniqueness of the Jewish people that unites us? It's the Torah. Lefi, she'umunateinu, he says in Emunot v'deot, in number one, Emunateinu b'nei Yisrael. Our imuna, our faith in the Jewish people, Eina Uma is not a nation, Ela b'Torah Teha. It's the Torah that unites us. V'keivan she'amar boreh she'ha'uma ta'amod kimei ha'shamayim va'aretz. And since God promised us that the Jewish people will survive forever, shamayim va'aretz, we're not going to get wiped out. That's because, hari behechreach, she'Torah Teha omedet kimei shamayim va'aretz. It's because the Jewish people's Torah is Kimei Shamayim Va'aretz, as we say every day in the Shema, it is indestructible and will survive all generations. We get our koach of survival from the Torah. Therefore, as long as we're connected to the Torah, that is our eternal magic, if you like. But as long as we're in the same Torah, it doesn't matter if we have different approaches within that Torah. And if you look at the differences between Sfaradim, Ashkenazim, and Teimanim, people often focus on the Minhagim, Oh, you're going to a Sephardi shul if you're Ashkenazi. If you're not used to it, it looks as though it's completely different. Everything looks different. Everything sounds different. But when you scratch below the surface, 95%+ of everything everybody's doing is exactly the same. The Sephardi Sidur is almost exactly the same. What they're saying for the Chazaras Hashatz is almost exactly the same. It's Karbonat, Akorbonis, Pesukei Dezimra, Kriyashma, Shmona Esrei. I mean, we focus on the differences. But they're often very superficial. And therefore, it's important for us to start by, with the idea that our Torah is one Torah. We all subscribe to the same Torah. And within that, we have different approaches, which we'll talk about as we go through. But it's important to stress that point to start with. Having said that, the Chumash is very keen to stress that we have to be different within different tribes. I just brought you here Har Sinai. Number two, v'yichtav Moshe et kol divrei Hashem v'yashkem ba'boker. Definitely, this is the Na'aseh v'nishma moment. They're going to have that. They got up in the morning, v'yashkem ba'boker, v'yiven mizbeach tachat ha'har. He built one mizbeach under the mountain, one mizbeach for everybody. And v'shtei mesrei matseva. Do people forget this? At Matan Torah, he erected 12 different pillars in addition to the one mizbeach. L'shnei mesrei shlei masad shiftei Yisrael. And it says explicitly, 12 for the 12. So at Matan Torah itself, the Jewish people had one mizbeach that unites them, and 12 pillars that express their uniqueness as different tribes. Similarly, number three, the Kohen Gadol, when he makes the Choshen Mishpat, V'avanim te'yena al shemot b'nei Yisrael, shtei mesrei al shemotam, you have to have the 12 stones, 12 different stones, for the 12 names of the Jewish people, Pituchei Chotam, all engraved with the names, Ish al Shemot Yena Leshneim Asar Shevet. In case you didn't think, oh, it's a coincidence, it's 12. No, 12 for the 12. And again, think about this, there's also unity. He has the stones on his shoulders, which have the names of the Jewish people together on a stone, and then he has the stones on the Choshen Mishpat, which are the names of the Shvatim separately. The same idea, they're together, but they're separate. Similarly, number four, you may not have thought of this. Shuftim v'shutrim titen lecha b'chol sha'arecha. Set up a court system, says the Torah. B'chol sha'arecha. Now, what's a shar? A shar means your city. The shar is the city gate. You have to have a bet din at the city gate because that's where people are coming in and out. Every city has to have a bet din. Asher Hashem lokecha noten lecha lishvatecha. For your tribes. What's that got to do with anything? Lishvatecha. I've got cities, the bet din is at the city. So the Ramban stresses here in number five, I think you can explain limanot bet din al kol hashevet. You can't just have a bet din for your city, you have to have a bet din also for the shevet. For who yishpat et kulam, and that will judge that shevet. And then you can have your city batei din sheyishpat et ha'ir. Now, the afal pi shekulam shavim b'minyan, and there's no difference in principle in the numbers. Shehem kaf gimel b'dinei nefashot. You need 23 dayanim to try capital offences. For gimel b'dinei mamonot and 3-4 monetary issues. Aval hagedolim shebehem, the greatest legal minds in your area, b'chachma yidmanu al kol shevet. They will be appointed to the tribal bet din. The tachdehem, and under them, l'chol ir v'ir, you get the more junior courts. The ein bali hadin yicholim l'chof tze'ezeh l'adun ela b'fnei beit din she'b'iram. If you were from, Modi'in, you couldn't take your people to the bet din in Yerushalayim. Okay, you had to go to your own city bet din. You can go to another bed din. Avala bed din hashevet, but the tribal bed din, yachol lechayved kol anshe shivto ledun nefala. They can say, no, we are going to try this case. The afiru haya hanidoinim beiram, even the individual litigants, they yachol lomar, they can say, lebed din agadol shel shiv shevet azlina. I want to go to the shevet. I want to go to the tribal bed din. I don't want to, meaning, you can't say, I want to be in the bed din of a different town. Because that's not your town. But you can say, I want to take it to the tribal bed din. And that's your right to do that. And he goes on to explain, because the tribal bed din establishes a tribal identity. And that's very, very important. And actually, Rav Soloveitchik understood, and I brought this reference to this, Rav Chaim Jachter, who is a well-known Rav in America, in New Jersey. He's actually an Ashkenazi Rav of a Sephardic shul, which is interesting. He has a book, Bridging Traditions, where he deals with this, and he says that Rav Soloveitchik understood this Ramban was a mandate for each tribe to interpret the Torah in their own manner. Meaning they have one Torah, but they have 12 different ways of interpreting it and developing it legally. And don't forget, we have this pasuk number 6, Durachecha Darchei Noam. Its ways, the Torah, singular, are Darchei Noam, are plural ways. V'chol Nesivo Seha Shalom. So again, it's the unity and the plurality. They have to go together. Chazal picked up on this in areas which don't seem to be tribal and developed them. Number 7, I'm not going to read the pasuk, you know the pasukim here, when Moshe wrote the Sefer Torah at the end of his life. He said he wrote a Sefer Torah. Chazal say number 8, Amar Rabbi Yanai, Kasav Yud Gimel Torahs. No, he wrote 13 Sifrei Torah. Yud Bet Yud Beit Shvatim, 12, each one for a tribe. The Achad Hinich Ba'aron, and one he put as a master copy. If anyone wanted to try and corrupt the other teachings of Torah, they would find the one they can check. So again, the idea that there's one in the middle, which unites everybody, and then there's 12 that you can have for each tribe, you have to have your own Sefer Torah. Then Kriyas Yamsuf, number 9, very interesting possibility for him. Ligzor Yamsuf Ligzarim. That God split the Yam Suf into Gzarim, Kili Olam Chasdor, Rashi says, Yud Gimel Karim Li Yud Gimel Shvatim. Each Shevet had their own path through the Yam Suf. Again, there's no indication of that in the Psukim in Shemot, but when you turn to Tehillim, it says, Lel Gzarim, there were Gzarim, there were lots of different splits there, and I brought you the Targum Yonason as well, who says the same thing there in Shemot, in number 10, at the end, that he split it into 12, which is very, very important. Because then each tribe, as they go through this amazing connection with God, Zekeli v'anvehu, they're pointing, as it were, to God. They're having this moment of real revelation, but each tribe's having its own revelation. And when they come out of the other end, they'll say, oh, how was it for you? We saw this. Well, we didn't see that. We saw this. We experienced it this way. And they're one, but they're split into 12. It's actually very beautiful. And the Bar Tanura on the when he talks in Pirkei Avos, number 11, Asara Nisim Nasu Lavosenu B'Mitzrayim V'Asara Alayam. There were 10 miracles at the sea. We're used to this from Seder night, all the different miracles of the Yam, yeah? So the Rav says, Rav Bar Tanura, Shvi, the seventh of the miracles of the sea, Shenigzar Hayam L'Shnei Masar Gzarim, that it was cut into 12 different units, Kidei Sheyavru Kol Shevet V'Shevet B'Derech Echad Levado, that each Shevet could have its own path. He stresses this, V'Hayim D'Siv L'Guzei Yam Suf L'Gzarim. Very, very beautiful. So this idea of having tribes, and of course today we don't have Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. We have Haredim and Misnagdim and Hasidim and religious Zionists and modern Orthodox. And we like that. And people sometimes say, oh, I don't know, I can't everybody just be Jews. No, they can't and they shouldn't. They have to be united, but they can't be uniform. They're meant unity, not uniformity. Everyone is meant to have a tribal identity. Ah, you may turn around and say, yeah, but you know, when Mashiach comes, we'll just be Jews. No. Lo nachon. Look in number 12, the end of Sefer Yecheskel, the very last psukim of Yecheskel's vision of the future. He talks about Sha'arei Ha'ir, the gates of the city will be how many? Our Shmot Shiftei Yisrael will be based on the names of the tribes of Israel, Sharim Shlosh. So finally, he goes through 3 in the north, 3 in the east, 3 in the south, 3 in the west, and it goes through each tribe will have its own gate in 12. Gates. So even when the third Beis HaMikdash is built, there'll be an insistence on maintaining this tribal unity. Now, just as a teaser for next week, you may be thinking in your mind, ah, that's interesting, because in the Mishnah in Shkalim, in the sixth Perek, it says there were 13 gates in the second Beis HaMikdash. So why were there 13 gates in the second Mikdash, but only 12 gates in the third? We need to talk about that next week, because the 13th gate was the gate for people who were all mixed up and didn't know what they were doing and who they were. And the Arizal translates that, and he says, just like there were 12 gates, there are 12 different gates for our tefillot, 12 different gates for our tefillot, and each different nusach, and we'll talk next week about pronunciation as well, each nusach has its own gate to get through to God. He says, but there are people who are all mixed up, and therefore there's a 13th gate, and he says, that was his nusach. The nusach of the Ari, because people ask, you know, if everybody's nusach is fine, and God understands everybody, why do you need to make up your own nusach? meaning we've got enough, thank you. He goes, no, because my nusach is the gate for everybody. And that's why, by the way, there is a halacha that a shul has to have 12 windows. 12 windows in the shul. There should be 12. When you're looking towards the Aaron Kodesh, there should be 12 windows. And very often, this is part of the minhag of having the tribes, as you know, the windows. But this is also this idea that there are 12 gates. Then there were 13. Now there are 12. Yes. Or they will be 12. Yes, but, well, that's not entirely true. I don't want to talk too much on the 10 tribes. But it does say that Yirmiyahu brought back the 10 tribes, many of the tribes. And maybe not all of them, but some of them. And it's the discussion about Yovel. So, and maybe they'll be found again. There's a whole discussion, maybe they'll come back, and people have been looking for them for the last 2,000 years. You know, they're going to come back over the Sambation River, and every tribe of the world seems to have tried to associate themselves with, you know, the lost tribes. The Native Americans, the Scottish, I can assure you the Scottish are not one of the 12, not that I've seen any evidence of, but maybe I missed something along the way. Okay, let's go over the page. Let's talk just on page 3 about the Ashkenazi-Sfari split. So I'm not a historian, and there is many, many PhDs have been written on this topic. What is the origin of the Ashkenazim and the Sfaradim? If you go back 2,000 years, there's no hints of an Ashkenazi-Sfaradi split. But if you go back 1,000 years, then it's clearly evident. So what happened in the meantime? So I brought you a few maps here. The origin of the Sfaradim is very clear. The Jews established a major community in Babylonia. We know this. Nebuchadnezzar took them as exiles, and then they remained there during the Second Temple period, even when they could have come to Israel, but they remained there and they developed there. And then after the destruction of the Second Temple, the Babylonian community eventually became the main Jewish community. Eretz Israel became Byzantine and very oppressive under the Romans, the Christian Romans, and Babylonia was really where it was all happening, which is why the Talmud Bavli was created there, etc. But it's important to understand that this community in Babylon was really kept away from Western Europe. Why? Because Western Europe was under the Roman Empire and then Byzantine Empire, and the Babylonian community were under the Parthians and then the Sasanians, and there was an enemy line in between. You couldn't just, you know, migrate easily. There were people who got through enemy lines. The Gemara talks about the people who traveled, Rav Dimi and Ravin, from one to the other, and they brought but they were yechidim. You couldn't just migrate across those enemy lines. So the Babylonian community stayed on its own. However, once the Islamic empire was established, very unexpectedly and very quickly in the 7th century and the 8th century, so all of a sudden the Muslims now had control over this entire area, not just the Middle East, the Babylonia, but also Persia, also North Africa, and then into Spain. So the Jews of Babylonia were now able to follow the trade routes as the Muslims opened this whole area, and that became the Sephardi community. There's really no question about that. They went through North Africa, they came into Spain, they got the name Sfarad. It's actually interesting why they got the name Sfarad. All the names of these modern European countries, Ashkenaz, Sfarad, are all names of Middle Eastern countries from the Tanakh. They're nothing to do with Europe. At Kidekach, then actually they gave other names. Canaan was like the Hungarians, so the Hungarian Empire. They gave these Middle Eastern names to other places in Europe, but Sfarad and Ashkenaz, the names originally, if you look them up in Tanakh, got nothing to do with Spain and Germany. But they gave them, so that was the Sfaradim. Fine. And I brought you a map here, both of the Islamic Empire in the 7th and 8th century. You can see how big it was, and also how Jews spread and emigrated through that. The Ashkenazim, however, are a major headache, a major conundrum. Where on earth did this group of really quite small group of 10, 20, 30,000 Jews in a really quite sort of out-of-the-way place in the Rhineland and in northern France, how on earth did they get there? Where did they come from? They just appeared all of a sudden, and they're distinct. So there are a number of suggestions. Some less Ashkenazi-friendly suggestions have been made. One is that they just basically a bunch of Bukharians that kind of wandered over the steppes of Asia and found their way into Europe. That's been pretty much discounted by academics as not true. The fragile consensus of academics, and this is also mentioned by some Rishonim themselves, for example, the Rokeach, who was in Regensburg in the north in Germany in the 12th century, he says, my family came from Italy. They came up, there was the Colonimus family in Italy was given permission, maybe by Charlemagne, maybe that's just part of the myth, but at that time was given permission to come up through Italy, up into Europe, and that's how the Ashkenazim made their way to Northern Europe. There's actually been some interesting genetic testing. For example, there was a cemetery in Erfurt in Germany that was discovered a few decades ago, and it was a 14th century Jewish cemetery, and they were able to do genetic testing on actually the teeth. Halakhically, it's not possible to just take the bones, take them to a lab. This was clearly a Jewish cemetery. You can't just uproot them and do a testing on them. But they found the teeth had been detached, and the teeth you can halakhically take away after death and look at. And they looked at the DNA, and I brought you a map here from a website that clearly the DNA was largely Italian. And the theory is basically that the Romans brought, we know this, hundreds of thousands of Jewish slaves after the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, meaning we didn't build the pyramids. I'm sorry to ruin it if you think we did. The pyramids were in Egypt long before the Jews ever got down there. Okay, but we did build a Colosseum, for sure. The Colosseum was built with Jewish slaves that were brought over from Rome. We built the Colosseum. They lived in Italy, and much of the DNA is Italian, South Italian, North Italian. There's also Middle Eastern. This, of course, becomes a big political question as well. You know, did the Ashkenazim really come from Israel, or are they just pretending that they came from Israel? It becomes a very political issue. But there's clearly a lot of Middle Eastern DNA in the Ashkenazim and an awful lot of Italian. Yes?
When you say Italian DNA, you mean Gentile?
Also, both. They found non-Jewish and Jewish, and there was a lot of marriage in, and exactly whether how that halakhically worked. There have always been non-Jews marrying into the Jewish people. I've quoted this before, but there's a Mishnah in Nagaim that talks about skin color of the Jewish people. Because obviously if you're looking for a white patch on the skin and trying to establish what kind of color white it is, it makes a big difference if you're from Nigeria or if you're from Sweden. It looks very, very different. And the Gemara asks, what skin color are the Jews? And it says, every skin color. There are Jews from Africa, there are Jews from what's called Germania, which is sort of, freckled, blonde-haired Jews. And originally, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, I assume, were just one particular way. They came from Ur-Kasdim. They probably looked like, Iraqis or whatever. But eventually, the Jews brought other people in. They've also found, by the way, tragically, there were a lot of bodies thrown into a well in England. They found them, like 30 or 40 bodies just thrown into the well. And they think that they might be Jewish, but they can't be sure as part of a pogrom. It's not like a Jewish cemetery where they can clearly know they were Jewish. And they found a lot of gingerhead people and blue-eyed people from the DNA. But again, we can't be completely sure that they're Jewish. Okay, fine. So the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim definitely split. One of the things we'll see next week, which is one of the big conundrums, is that they only started talking about the different pronunciations and debating it in the Achronim. Why do none of the Rishonim, none of them, talk about, we speak like this and they speak like that? And there was a lot of crossover. We'll talk about that next week. Nobody mentions it until the Maharal in the 16th century. It could well be that actually there were no clear Sephardi Ashkenazi accents in that time, in the earlier times in the medieval period. They came later as Yiddish developed, etc. And they went east to Poland and Ukraine. We'll talk about that next week. But that's for them. Let's just look now at these two minhagim that I'd like to look at in some depth halachically, of the Yichud Rum and the Sheva Brachos question. So let's start with the Yichud Rum. So the Rambam Paskens, number 13, page 4. Ha'arusa asura leba'ala midivrei sofrim. That if a husband and wife, even if they're halachically married, they've done erusin, put the ring on the finger, hari at mekudesh edli, no question, they're husband and wife. The rabbi said they're not allowed to have a sexual relation with each other, even though they're halachically min haTorah, they're married. Because they have to do a proper nisuin, they have to do chuppah, there has to be a formality to the marriage before they can live together, they need to have the ceremony. Because when she's in Arusa, she's living with her father, you can't have him creeping in and doing all whatever they're doing. You know, even though she says, you're my wife, we can't have that. We talked before Pesach last year about the tribe of Yehuda, or the area of Yehuda, where they did have relations before, but that's not for now. Va'afilu im kitsha babia. Even if he chose the three ways that you can do kiddushin, the way we could do today is you could do a gift, you could do a shtar, but you could also do bia, which is a sexual relationship. Even if that's how they create the erusin, it's a one and only, it's a one-off. Asur lo lavo aleha via shnia. He can't be with her again, beis avia, while she's living with her father's house. Until when? Ad she yavi oto latoch beito. He has to bring her formally into his home. The yityached ima bifreshenelo. He has to do yichud with her in his home and separate her from her parents' family to be his wife in his family. The yichud, says the Rambam, is her joining him in his home. That is yichud. The yichud zeh, says the Rambam, this yichud, who anikra knisa l'chupa, that is called chupa, bringing her into the chupa, v'hu anikra nisuin b'chol makom. And whenever we talk about nisuin, chupa, nisuin, the same, that's what we mean. We mean her coming into his home as man and wife living together. Fine. So for the Rambam, and we'll see the Sfaradim who follow that, yichud is when they move in together as a husband and wife. Fine. The Rama says in number 14, but we don't exactly do it like that today. And the Rama brings down a number of other minhagim as to what the Ashkenazim call chupa. So look at number 14. The Eishomrim. The Rama says it could be. We hold the chupa ain't a yichud. The chupa is not really the yichud. Even if he doesn't actually have yichud with her, if he brings her, they bring her to his home, they've symbolically taken her away from the father's home, brought to the husband's home, that could also be good enough. And it could be the chupa, chofef, means to cover, is when they put the talit of the chatan over the head of the kala, and they stand together under the talit. B'shat ha-bracha, when we do the birkat nisuin, that could be chupa. The haminag pashut achshav, and the minag that we have today, what do we do today in Poland in the 16th century? Likrot chupa, what do we call chupa? Makom shemachnisim sham yiriyah pusa, we put a cloth over al gabi klusaot, on poles, we put a cloth on four poles. Umachnisim tachter hachatan v'hakala barabim, and we bring the kala and the chatan under the canopy. Umakach sham, and he does kiddushin there. Umavarchin shem because erusin, and soon we do it all together. So if you ask a Jew now, an Ashkenazi Jew, probably also a Sephardi Jew today, what is the word chupa? What does it mean? It means the canopy. But that's all. There are all different ways of doing it. And by the way, he didn't mention here, which elsewhere he mentions, bedekin. Bedekin could also be part of the chuppah, where the chatan goes to the kala and covers over the kala's face. That's also possibly a form of chuppah. The achakach, and what do they do after they've done all of these things? Molichim oisam lebayit. They take them into a room. Bayit often means a room here. And what do they do? What's the main point of this little room? The ochlim. And they eat. Beyachad. Bemokam sanua. The whole point of what you and I call the yichud room is for eating. They have a little snack. They might have been fasting the whole day. They have a little bit of time together. This is what we do today. Okay, fine. And you know that from the weddings that you have been to. Okay, so Ashkenazim and Sfaradim, do they do things differently? So Rav Avadi Yosef, and we'll see in a minute from his son, Rav Yitzchak Yosef, the Sfaradim have come under pressure over the last 40, 50 years, to move away from the Rambam's psak, which is, you don't need a yichud room. You have yichud is when you go home together at the end of the wedding. That's yichud. To move to what the Ashkenazim do, is to have this little room where they, you know, go afterwards, which we call the yichud room. Rav Avadia wants nothing of this. He said it's wrong. Number 15. Sheila. Ha'im akala la'acha sheva brachot shemavarachin tachat ha'chupa. If when they've done the sheva brachot tachat ha'chupa, nechshevet miyad k'nesua. Is that called nisuin? Is that the end? Is that what everything? The chayevet bekisui harosh kadat. And now she has to cover her hair, because once she's a nisu'ah, she has to cover her hair so fully. And therefore, it does make a difference what we call nisu'in and what we don't call nisu'in. He then has about 15 pages, which I've just skipped, okay, where he brings all the different sources. And the wonderful thing about Rav Avadi is he has a sikum at the end. He has a little summary. Rav Moshe Feinstein doesn't do that. You just got to read all 15 pages. You really got to read all 15 pages for Rav Avadi as well. But here, habo sikum. Ein akala chayavit lechzot rosha miyad la'acha sheva brochas. She doesn't have to cover her hair straight after the sheva brochas. She's tachat achupa. Mipnei shedina adayin ka'arusa. She's not a nesua. She's an arusa. Ad la'achar hayichud. Until after they've done a real yichud. Which is a big relief. Because otherwise, right at the end of the sheva brochas, she'd had to just throw on a sheitel. Or throw on, for Rav Avadia, not a sheitel. Throw on a scarf, okay? And she'd have to, it would be very awkward. No, she's still an arusa. Ulufima shenogim yotze Ashkenaz. Now there are Ashkenazim who do something different. Shechatam v'kala mityachadim miyad achar sheva brachos. They do a yichud straight after sheva brachos under the chuppah. Shetachat achuppah. Ala kala, according to them, lachzot et rosha miyad achar tzeita mecheda hayichud. He said it's quite obvious. If you're going to do a little yichud room, we'll call it the yichud room now, she has to put a head covering on straight after. She can't come out to the wedding with a veil and with a headband and with the bridal outfit. She has to cover her hair properly. Because she's, if you're going to say that's yichud. Okay? Aval hasfardim ubnei hedot ha-mizrach lo nagu lityached ela rak la'acha gmar hasuda. We don't do this yichud room. We do it after in the home. Because sheholchim lebeitah, when they go back home. Umin hagam ze yisodato b'hararei kodesh. And this minag is based on holy mountains. Ve'ein l'shanot. Don't you mess with our minag. And it saves the kala all of the stress of covering her hair, because she only needs to cover her hair once they go home and do a proper yichud as husband and wife in the home together. Okay? Very, very clear. So his son, Yevadol Mechaim Lechaim Rav Yitzchak Yosef, has an article in Tchumim, which I've quoted from at some length, and he explains in more depth why the Sfaradim do not like the yichud room. Number 16. And so he gives three or four points here. Let's look at this together. Sikum. This is the end of his article. You can easily pull this offline. Ein lebachur Sfaradi leshanot miminhag rabotenu hasfaradim. Young Bokharim these days, Sfaradi Bokharim, and in a minute he's going to tell you what's bothering him, which is the Sfaradi Bokharim are going to Ashkenazi yeshivas. Okay? They shouldn't change from the minhag Sfaradim. Ulasod yichud miyad achar chuppah. They shouldn't do a yichud group. Kifi minhag Ashkenazim. These Sfaradi boys should be following Sfaradi minag. It's not a minag based on just the people. It's the goonim. It's not just that you don't need to do a yichud room. You shouldn't do a yichud room. Only after later at night. Bet ubufratshehu minag mchuar. And then he raises an interesting question, which we'll see why he says this. And it's just like so inappropriate. Okay? It's mechu'ar, it's disgraceful. Lelechet lechede yichud b'pnei kabel v'am ha'beida. That all these people are dancing them into a yichud room. That's just so lacking in sniut. That's not, when they go home later, there's just the two of them, they go home together. But for everyone to dance and sing as they go together into Yichud, said, who ever heard of such a thing? It's just not appropriate. V'gam hakala titzarech latzeit mecheda Yichud b'kisui rosh. And like his father said, and if they are going to do a Yichud room, she better cover her hair straight away. Gimel. V'afmi rabbanei Ashkenaz. And I'll tell you something, even the Ashkenazim, yesh shekaru levatel minhag zeh. There are some Ashkenazim that also want to get rid of the yichud room. I haven't found many, but there are some. Ela sheminhag avoseinu b'yadeim. But you know something? I'm not going to tell them they have to. They have a minhag. The Ashkenazim also have rabbis. Ve'ein lanu levatel minhagam. We shouldn't cancel their minhag. V'kach ein lahem levatel minhageinu. But they shouldn't cancel our minhag. Shenosad al pi gedolei hadoros. V'achen, and therefore, etzleinu b'yishivat ma'atirah chazon avadia, and our Sfaradi yeshivas, anu manhigim b'chol t'haikif, we forcefully enforce on the boys, she'abachurim lo yishanu b'minag avoseinu, l'kayem, and they should fulfill by doing that, v'yigba liboy b'darchei Hashem, they should go in the darchei Hashem, laharot shiroiv k'kol ha'minhagim shalanu, because it shows the world that almost all, if not all, are minhagim of Sfaradim, miyusadim al adnei paz al gedolei Torah, they're based on real gedolim. She'achin hayu l'sfaradim gedolei Torah, because you know something? The Sfaradim also had big rabbis. It wasn't just the Ashkenazim. The yorei ma'amiki ba'alacha, and people who were able to get to the depths of ba'alacha, l'achin anu oimdim al kach, therefore we insist on it. She'lo yasu chayde yichud achar chuppah. He's really, I think, getting a little defensive here. We insist that they mustn't do a yichud room. V'gam lo yelchu l'cheidet stadi, and they shouldn't even go to a side room. L'hitztaleim. No photographs. Just the choson kala in a room. Be'emsa chatuna, in the middle of the chatuna. Ki yesh b'kach nishol, that's also a problem, because she's maybe it's a yichud. She'miyad acha chatan, lokech et kala l'cheidet stadi, u'midyachta ala. And even, because after they go into this room, hakala tzrichot l'chisot rosha, she has to cover her hair. Are you going to say, well, that's not really a yichud room, the photographer's there? Okay, it says af im lo haya yichud gamur. Even if it's not a like full blown yichud, because the photographer's there, that's still dangerous. She might still have to cover her hair. It's yichud enough. Which is, I don't quite understand how that could really be Yichud. We're so makpid that there's no one else there, there's no exits, there's no way they can, no one can see them, and da da da. He said, no, no Yichud rooms, absolutely not, completely banned. And he addresses another issue, which is the following. But what about the brachot, the birkat hanisuin? You stand under the chuppah, and the Masari Kiddushin, or whoever, does the sheva brachot. So these are brachot, which are on the nisuin. So for the Ashkenazim, it kind of works better, because you do the brachot, and then immediately, they leave quickly, and they go to the yichud room, and that's the end of the nisuin. But according to the Sfaradim, you do brachot, and then the real yichud is 7 hours later, when they go home. What's happened to these brachot? They're kind of just floating in the air for hours and hours and hours until you do the real yichud. Because according to Rav Avadia, this woman, when she comes on from under the chuppah to the wedding feast, she's now rusa. She's not a nisua. You've just made birkat hanisuin in a situation where the woman doesn't become a nisua. How can you do that? So he says, no, I have a good answer here. And this is very interesting. Here, look, number 17. Ube'emet shebirkat hanisuin chashime kebirkat hashevach. Understand that the brachas you make under a chuppah, the sheva brachas, are not birkat mitzvah. They're not asher kiddushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu. The birkat ha'erusin are. Okay? But not the birkat nisuin, the brachas of praise. The lot birkat ha'mitzvah. Kol shekasev Rabbeinu Avraham ben Arambam. B'shem Aviv, Rav Avraham ben Arambam, quotes the Rambam, his father. Shitzarich ha'chatan levarek birkat ha'erusin b'atzmo. The chatan himself, says the Rambam, should make the brachas on the cup for the birkat ha'erusin. Asher kiddushanu mitzvotav v'tzivanu ala arayas, etc., etc. Because that's the birkat ha-mitzvah. By the way, our minhag today is not to do that. We don't. Even the chatan doesn't make the birkat ha-erusin, even though they are the brachas of the mitzvah of that he's doing. Because we don't want to embarrass the chatanim who are not able to make those brachas. So the minhag is that the masada kiddushin makes those brachas for the chatan and the kala. Which is a bit strange because, if, you know, when do you get a situation where somebody does a mitzvah, assuming that the wedding is a mitzvah itself, that's a debate between the Rambam and the Rosh. The Rambam holds it is a mitzvah. When do you get a situation where somebody does a mitzvah and then you ask a third person who's completely unconnected to the mitzvah to come and make a bracha? Your mitzvah, your bracha. And in fact, when my son got married, Rav Yol bin Nun was his Masari Kiddushin, and Rav Yol bin Nun said, no, the Rambam, Minag Ateimanim, Rav Yol bin Nun really likes the Yemenite minhag, and he said my son should make the sheva brach, so to make the birkat ha'erusin himself under the chuppah, which is what he did. And all the Rosh Yeshiva, Sfardi, Ashkenazi standing there were like gulping, saying like, ah, oh, mazeh, you know, etc. And there were debates afterwards into the meal. You know, the Rav Moshe Lichtenstein was there, and everyone's getting up there. And if you know Rav Yol bin Nun, He doesn't feel bound by the traditions of the Jewish people up until now. He understands that we come back to Eretz Israel and we go back to the minhag, authentic minhag. Anyway, so my son said these brachot, and it's all done now, so it's too late, and they're definitely married. However, he said that's the brikat mitzvah, okay. But Masha'enke, middle of the second line, Masha'enke and Sheva Brachot. But that's not the same for the Sheva Brachot, Shil Nisuin. Ain't a Chatan Rashai Levarkan. For sure, the Chatan can't say those Brachot. El Agadol, Hanim Tzayim Sham. These Brachot should go to a dignitary. They're not the Brachot on the mitzvah, they're Brachot of praise. Yeah? Shakar Ba'arich Vodo. You know, you're praising God by the institution of marriage. They should go to dignitaries that are there. She'enam Ela Brikot HaShevach. The Abba Mari, and my father, says Rav Avraham bin Amambam, Kas! He got upset, he got angry. Al Chatan Shibirach Sheva Brochot Latzma. And the Chasan that made Sheva Brochot, you shouldn't do that. The Amma Shisiba Kaso, and the reason he got angry is Atam Shizachatis, because I said they should go to a dignitary. Now, says Rav Yosef, the Gamma Iri, Meiri Machshiv et Brikot and Isuin ki Brikot HaShevach, the Meiri agrees that these are brachas of praise. V'ken Kazav Amaram Chalawa, the Maram Chalawa also says that the brachas Brikot HaSunin lava ala Knisa L'chuppah, hey, they're not on the Knisa L'chuppah, ela ala Sifa Ta'am, they're praising the people, or Brikot Shel Shvach, hey, fine, good. And therefore, Kevin Shekane, lo ba'inu bahu oidelas yasam. They don't need to be right next to the mitzvah. They're not brachas on the mitzvah. They can be detached. How detached? So then in number 18 he says, Ach yesh lama da'av shebirkas ha-shevach lo ba'inu smach mamash lema'oira. They don't have to be right there. They have to be connected. There has to be a clear connection between the bracha and a praise and what happens. Okay? What about thunder and lightning? One of the interesting questions, I don't know why this comes up so much in the halachic literature, but it's discussed. What happens if you're in the bathroom and there's a clap of thunder? Okay? And then the first thing that's on your mind is, oy vey, I need to make a bracha. And by the time you get out of the bathroom, it's like a minute later. You've lost the bracha. So you can't do it. In einu mavarech toch kedei dibur, if you don't make a bracha within 3 or 4 seconds, lo nikar al mashim mavarech. No one knows what you're making a bracha on. You hear a clap of thunder. You're in the bathroom or wherever you are. You come out 4 or 5 minutes later and you look, you stand in the room, you suddenly make a bracha. Shekochu gvrasa ugvrasa male oilam. On what? What's that? No, it's disconnected. Masha'en came and needed the dam, but that's not the same as a wedding. Even if the yichud is hours later, even at the end of the meal, they call makam b'shasa bracha, when they make those brachas, nikar al ma babrikas hashevach. Everyone knows what it's for. Everyone knows it's the wedding. Asher yichud yavo achakach. No one thinks that these brachas are disconnected. That's connected enough. And he brings another raya. What about a chupat nida, where the kala wasn't able to get to the mikveh before the chupa, which we try very hard to avoid. And the Rambam, by the way, says doesn't even work halachically, but we don't paskin like the Rambam, Ashkenazim or Sephardim. We do a chupat nida. Chupat nida, she may only get to the mikveh 2, 3, 4 days later. They may only be able to do any kind of yichud days later. So what goes on there? He says, obviously, the Birkat and Nisuin happen at the Chuppah, and the Yichud happens days later. Nobody has a problem with that, because everyone knows that what these brachas connect to. Therefore, it's very clear that we can do what the Sfaradim do. And then he explains why he's so upset. Now look at this. This is where the title of this series, which has been since we started, Hashkafik and Halachik, or whether it's Halachik and Hashkafik, you'll see right now. Look at number 19. Let's do this quite quickly, because I want to get to the next point as well. But in recent years, Sephardi boys have been going to Ashkenazi yeshivas. And they've been changing the minhagim of the Sephardim. And they've been pressuring even the Sephardi Rosh Yeshivas to do yichud straight after the chuppah. The higdilu la'asod kama Rosh Yeshiva Sfardim shematnim al-vom. And some of these Rosh Yeshiva make it a condition, l'sidur kiddushin, they won't do the wedding, ba'asiyat yichud achakum, unless they do a yichud run. He says, what on earth is going on? Why is this pressure happening? Look in number 20. Mama od tim hezi, I am so astounded, says Rabbi Yitzhak Yosef, Barisi, Masha Kosov, there are people who write, Rabbi Yitzchak ben Shushan, okay, b'sifro, b'yayin Yitzchak, he brings the sefer of Rabbi Yitzchak ben Shushan, kasav she'hoil v'cheder yichud hu chumra. The cheder yichud is a chumra. L'chol adeus, what's your problem? Let's do a chumra. Mimele gam asfardim rishan lasot ken. Meaning, come on, what's the harm? It's a chumra. We think we should do the yoch yichud and the regular yichud, and the yichud room. Why not keep a chumrah? Okay, let the kala put a sheitel on or something. You know, it's a chumrah. What's that? Truth is that Rav Avadya might allow a sheitel just for the wedding, because of other things as well, because they haven't consummated the marriage, but whatever, not for now. The acha mechila, and after I ask you mechila, he says, Rav Yitzchak, teima ikra, I am astounded by what you suggested. Hei rehivu ois ben Hashem, how can they be so arrogant? Levatel b'machia, to just wipe out with a stroke of the hand, ma shehinhigu gudoli oilem shehayi burushalayim, dorach ador ad hagon Rav Atiyah, of Ezra Atiya, how can you just ignore our Sfardi Masora like this? Shikatnam ava mikreisenu. Their little fingers were thicker than our tummies, he says. Meaning these people were gedolei gedolim, and you are going to override them? I've explained to you where this comes from. And it's really inappropriate. The goyim to do a yichud rim. The goyim lekama mechsholos, and he goes through some of the things we said. Ki yadua umashay kan rishayim lahachnu. What do you mean it's a chumra? Adarabah, on the contrary, it's a kula. It's a kula. But not chumra. In hag minag mucho'ar. The gamla actually it's a kala, da-da-da, with the head covering. And then just last paragraph here. Ume'ayla no shamanu shehaya oisim chedi yichud etzel asfarim. We never heard of this. V'rak v'shanim achronon shinu et ha-minhag biglau hashpa'at harabanim b'yeshivot mesuyamot. This whole thing is going haywire because of pressure from rabbis. Shehafku halacha zo le'inyan hashkafati. They've turned this, which is purely halachic, into a hashkofa issue. Shekbiyachal, as if to say, b'zeh nimdad ha'adam im hu ben yeshiva ola. Are you a ben yeshiva? Are you a frumer, younger man? Frum men have a yichud room. The Amaratzim, they don't know from a yichud room. A frum, you know, this is the frum way to behave. He's very unhappy with this. Very unhappy with this. V'lo yadu, v'lo yavinu, she'etze kashuk klal hashkafa. This has got nothing to do with hashkafa. Ela inyan hilchati, tzniut, greida. Ulchein ein lanu lehitzachef. Lehisachef, we shouldn't be dragged in, pulled in. Bazeh, hachachasoverim, for those people who hold, shekol min hagenu ba'im mehamon am. There are people who put down the Sfaradim in Hagim. They come from the Hoi Poloi, the people. No, Chas V'Shon, V'lo Al Pi Gedolim, he doesn't like it, about to say the least. Okay, now, very bravely, in the next edition of Tchumim, Rav Shlomo Levi wrote an article against Rav Yitzchak Yosef. Now, Rav Shlomo Levi was my son's Rosh Kolel, when he did Smicha in Har Etzion. He's also Sfaradi. He's also a renowned posek. He's also the son-in-law of Rav Chaim David Levi, who was the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. So he's miyuchas himself through his wife, Sfaradi, Gedolim, etc. And I put on the next page, and we're not going to read all this through 21 and 22. I'll just mention what he says. He says, you know something? I don't think that this is the only way to understand it. First of all, I think you can view it as a chumrah. What's the harm? Let her cover her hair. And even on the hair covering, he says, there are different ways of understanding hair covering. It's not as bad as you think while she's still a kala, until she really comes home with her husband. There are ways to understand hair covering that'll work even without covering her hair. And then he comes up with a new point, which is, and what happens if they call up an Ashkenazi Rav to make a brocha as one of the Sheva brochas? Could be. Lots of mixed marriages these days, mixed ethnicity marriages. I bet a lot of you here have sons, daughters, grandchildren, Ashkenazim, Sfaradim, Taimanim, and Ethiopians, lots of people. And he says, it's all very well for you as a Sfaradi Rav to say you can make a brocha right now and the Yichud is later on. But the Ashkenazim don't hold that way. And Rav Hershel Shechter actually says, I won't make a brocha under a chuppah, he says, if they don't have a yichud room right now. You can't have a yichud room in 7 hours from now. I'm not going to make a brocha. So he says it's going to be really difficult for these mixed ethnicity marriages that they can't call up Ashkenazi Rabbonim to give the Sheva brochas, which he says is a big problem. And he says, and in case you're worrying, one of the arguments that Rav Yosef made is, how can you change the minhag now? It's what's called Motzi Laz Ala Rishonim. It makes out that in the past, all these gedolim were doing it all wrong. Oh, now you're chfruma, you're clever. He says, no, it's not Motzi Laz Ala Rishonim. They never had mixed ethnicity marriages in the past. They never encountered this problem. Now you have to cater for Ashkenazim and Sfaradim together. It's necessary to make these changes. It doesn't say anything about what happened in Morocco 100 years ago. So it's very interesting. He makes this whole argument. He also is very interesting. He rejects Rav Yosef's concern about the yichud room being a lack of tzniut. He says, look, the way you're thinking about the yichud room, in theory, the yichud room has to be a place where the husband and wife could be intimate with each other. That's why they're not allowed to have svarim there, sefer Torah, etc., etc. It's a very, in theory, if they wanted to be intimate, that they could be. He says, you're really thinking of the yichud room, says Rav Levi to Rav Yosef, like the old Moroccans and the old Sfaradim did, that they need to know if the kala is a betula or not. And everybody's kind of waiting to hear, she's a betula, she's not a betula, etc. And therefore, okay, nachinami, if that's what everybody's interested in, then dancing everybody to the yichud room and waiting outside to hear the news is completely inappropriate. He says, but no one has the slightest interest now in that question. all people are trying to work out when the Chazan and Kala are in the Yichud room, is they're trying to work out where they're sitting, on which table. They're trying to work out whether they're davening Maariv and where they're davening Maariv. They're trying to work out why the photographers are taking so long. Nobody is interested in whether the Kala is, the Kala isn't. It's a he says, and the whole wedding's now much more mixed. The Chazan and the Kala sit together. They sit on the dance floor together. He said, it's a completely different world. The Tznius issues that you're worried about are Tznius issues from a different life. They're from a different age, and therefore he says it's not an issue. There, basically, you have the argument, and you can think about that and ask your own poskim as that how that works. Okay, so that's the first issue with the yichud room. I think at my niece's wedding, they will not have a yichud room because they're very much for Rav Avadia people, and therefore there's nothing to talk about. The second minag, which I want to talk about just for about 12 minutes, is as follows. What's the deal with Sheva Brachot? Now, many people in this room may not even realize this is a question. Meaning, we've all been to Sheva Brachot. Hundreds, Baruch Hashem, Simchas, Sheva Brachot, and you have in this house, and then in this house, and then in this house. But it's not so straightforward. Look, please, over on the page, on page 7. Because the Gemara says in number 23, Tana Rabbanan, Mevarachim Birkat Chatanim, where do you make the Sheva Brachas during the week? Bebeit Chatanim. You make them in the house, where the Chosan and Kala live. Similarly, number 24 in Sukkah, the Amar Rabbi Abraham is Rav Zivda, Bar Zavda, Amar Rav. Chatan v'hashushvinim v'kol bnei achupa, peturim min asukkah v'kol shiva. The chosam doesn't have to sit in a sukkah all 7 days because he's oisik b'mitzvah, he's involved in one mitzvah, he's potter from sitting in the sukkah. Ah, says the Gemara, my time, what's the problem? Mishum deboy le miyachde, because they need to celebrate. V'lech le b'sukkah, so let them eat in the sukkah. Uliyachde b'sukkah, and let them celebrate in the sukkah. Meaning, let them do the Sheva Brachas in the sukkah. What's your problem? So says the, says no. Ein simcha ela b'chupa. Now what does chupa mean here? You see in Tosfos in a minute, chupa doesn't mean the canopy. Chupa means that the chosan's home, where the chosan and kala are living. You can't just drag everyone off to a sukkah and pretend that that's now the center of the festivities. It's a side room. Says the Gemara, v'leichlu b'sukkah, v'yichadu b'chupa. Okay, so let them eat in the sukkah and go back and celebrate in the chosan's home. No, ein simcha ela b'machan suda. You have to have the simcha where you're eating. The avdu chupa b'sukkah, so let the chosan and kala live in the sukkah for 7 days. Do everything in the sukkah, move the whole chasana to the sukkah. Says the Gemara, that's not going to work. Abaya ama mishum yichud. No, you can't do that. The chosan will be left in yichud with a guest, or the kala in yichud with a guest. Like the sukkahs were out of the way, they were down in the field. You can't have it there. Rava says, mishum tsara, the chosan and the kala are not going to be private together. It's going to be, it's not going to work. So Tosfos in number 25 picks this up and he says, "Ein simcha ela b'chupa." And this is a very important Tosfos because Tosfos was Ashkenazi. They were Ashkenazi. He says, or they said, "Ein simcha ela b'chupa." Mashma mikande im yatsa chasam mikupaso. If the chasam leaves his chupa, hafilu kalaso imo, even with the kala, the holchim leechol b'bayit acher, and they go to eat in another house. De ein mevarachin shasimcha b'ma'ino. You cannot say the special formula at the beginning of the benching shasimcha b'ma'inoi. The loy birchas chasanim, and you can't make sheva brachas. Kevin de ein simcha ela b'chupa, because the simcha is not at someone else's house; it's at the chupa. V'tzarich ledakdek mahaya chupa. What do I mean by chupa? What do we mean by chupa? Mahi chupa. De im makam shebaruchu tchila birchas nisuin. If chupa means the place where they originally got married in the original wedding ceremony. Sometimes they get married in the center of town. They have a chuppah in the middle of the square. And they do brachas there because there's a lot of people. They can't fit in the home. So that's not chuppah. Chuppah is not where they had the ceremony. Chuppah is where they live. The chuppah means where the chasam and kala have moved in. Not some random temporary place. Akrai ba'alma v'sham mevarachim birkas chasanim called shiva. Only in the chosan's home can you make sheva brachas with brachas all through the week of sheva brachas. Wow, that means you can't go to somebody's house and make sheva brachas. You can't. That's not where the chosan and kala are living. Tosfos seems very clear. Shulchan Aruch, number 26. Yesh oimrim. Oh, Yesh Omrim. Interesting. Does that mean he really holds by this, or there's only she'im chatan yotzei mechupasa if the chasan leaves the chupa, afilu kalasaimo, even if he takes the kala with him, the holchim leechol b'bayit acher, and they go celebrate and eat in a different house, Ein omrim sham birkas chasonim. You can't make sheva brachas there. Ah, v'hani minikushidasu lachzor. That's only if they're coming back home later. Achakol achakach lechupasa to their home. Aval im halach legamrei. If the whole, you know, party, you know, move from New York at the beginning of the wedding and they all go to Los Angeles for the rest of the sheva brachas week. Okay, that's fine. Im halach legamrei lebayt acher. If they go to a different place permanently, v'kol achabura imo with all of the family and all of the celebrants, etc. Now, so basically, that becomes the main place now. But Gamsham Nikra Chuppah, that's called the new Chuppah, if you like. Sometimes they move to a different city. If they're not coming back to their regular home, yeah, you can change locations. But if they're living at home and you go out to friends, you can't make Sheva Brachas. And most interestingly, the Ramah does not object. The Ramah doesn't say anything. You would expect the Ramah to jump in saying, well, that's fine for the Sfaradim, but Aminag is to make Sheva Brachas whoever's... He doesn't say that. Why not? Because Tosfos holds the same thing. You can't make Sheva Brachad at somebody's house. You can't do it. It has to be at the Chosson's house. The Ramah, in fact, in number 27, there's another deal and there's another situation, which is, you know, do you use one cup for Sheva Brachas or two cups for Sheva Brachas? And the Mechaber says one cup will do, and the Ramah says, no, we always use two cups, even if we're only making Hagofen and Asher Baras Asom V'Simcha. Only those two brachot, not the other Sheva brachas. So what's the case that the Ramah's talking about where you're only making those two brachas? Now, it could be where you don't have Panim Chadoshas. There's nobody new there. If there's nobody new there, then you just make the first bracha, the Hagofen, and the last bracha. But it could be the case that we're talking about. You have your Sheva Brachas at the neighbors down the street, and that's when you're only making two Brachas. So it's not even clear that the Ramah holds any differently to the Mechaber, which is a big surprise that Ashkenazim don't take account of this at all, and we're all used to schlepping around everybody's houses for Sheva Brachas. The reason for that is number 28, which is the Taz. I'm not going to read this in detail because time is running out, but there's a long, long Taz. The Taz is living only 60, 70 years after the Ramah, and he says, I don't understand. Where we live in Poland, everybody goes to other people's houses for Sheva Brachas. It's very interesting. He says, I don't know about... Fine, Tosfos says no, but this is what we do. This is our minhag. And he relearns all of the Gemaras. He says, the problem with the sukkah is it's just a sukkah. A sukkah is like a little place that people go to just to be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah. But if you're going to somebody's house and the chosson's there and the kala's there and people are celebrating there, of course you can say Sheva Brachot. The Ashkenazim are all samich on this Taz, which is very interesting, which is a week. It's a week smach, because the Gemara seems quite clear, and the Tosfos seems quite clear, and yet we're all relying on this Taz. And these are brachas. This is bracha after bracha after bracha after bracha after bracha. Normally speaking, we're not just fast and loose when it comes to making brachot. So I brought you at the bottom here that on this issue, the Ashkenazim rely on the Taz, and indeed some Sfaradim even rely on the Taz as well. There's Sfaradim who are lenient too. Some Sfaradim allow the only the house of the Chatan V'Kala and also their parents. That's good enough. Some don't allow that. Some say if you go to a hotel for Shabbat Sheva Brachot, that's okay. But some don't even allow that. Rav Avadi Yosef, they make Sheva, when he was the chief rabbi, the Rishon Lezion, they made Sheva Brachot every single night in big marquees. There were hundreds of people there. They didn't once say Sheva Brachot. They just said Hagofen and Asher Sason B'Simcha. Asher Baras Sason B'Simcha. They didn't make the Sheva Brachot. And Rav Mordechai Eliyahu has his own. He says you could only allow... What about asking an Ashkenazi to say those brachas? Well, one second. You can just become a Sephardi or Ashkenazi. How does that work? So Rav Mordechai Eliyahu says he'd allow an Ashkenazi to say Sheva Brachas in this situation, only in quotes and quotes, dire situations. Like, what's going to be a dire situation? Shalom Bayis. Meaning the Kala's Ashkenazi, the Kala's grandfather's there, or the Kala's rabbi's there. You're going to say, I'm sorry, you know, we're not going to allow you to do it. So you get these situations which are a little bit pressed. But I brought you lots and lots of... there's one of the Rabbanim, Sfaradi Rabbanim in YU. I'm going to pronounce his name wrong. Rav Mordechai Javaheri. I don't know him personally. I apologize if I pronounced that wrong. He has a 231-page kuntras just on this issue. Go download it and read it by next week and see what you think, okay? We'll end there. Next week, we're going to move on to Sfaradi Ashkenazi pronunciation, but this is the beginning of our series. Please.